You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Tehillim podcast. This week we're going to take a look at Tehillim Ayin Bet. Tehillim Ayin Bet is the last mizmor of the second section of the book of Tehillim. This is made obvious by the last pasuk of the mizmor, pasuk kaf, which says kalut tefilot David ben Yishai. Right, with this mizmor ends the tefilot of David, the son of Yishai. So that last pasuk, most would agree, is not actually part of the mizmor itself. The mizmor starts, right, in Pasuk Aleph, with the words Lishlomo, right? And this means that according to most commentaries, this mizmor was either written by Shlomo HaMelech or about Shlomo HaMelech. In either case, the mizmor is a prayer for a king, right? Again, most likely Shlomo himself, who took over for his father, David. And we'll see as we read through the mizmor why it is so relevant to Shlomo, right? Why it is specifically relevant to that particular king, to Shlomo HaMelech, although, as we will also see, it's also something that is relevant to all kings. Elohim, mishpatecha lemelech ten, v'tzidkatecha levein melech. Right? It's a prayer. Right? Hashem, give the king the ability to judge with justice and righteousness, right? Mishpatecha lemelech ten, tzidkatecha levein melech. Right? The idea is that there should be tzedek, there should be righteousness in the justice with which the king leads his people, right? Because we know that one of the main jobs of the king was to judge the people. Pasuk bet, yadin amcha v'tzedek v'aniyecha v'mishpat. So in this pasuk, the mizmor takes it a step further. Not only, of course, to judge the entire nation with tzedek, but the mizmor particularly pinpoints the aniyim, aniyecha b'mishpat, right? The poor, they're the ones who often suffer the short end of justice. So it's particularly important that the king should make sure that the aniyim are given justice as well. Pasuk Gimel, Yisu harim shalom la'am u'givaot bitztaka. Some see this pasuk as a continuation of what the king will do, right? By promoting justice and righteousness, the king also promotes peace. As the Dat Mikra commentary explains, right, in the pasuk it says, Yisu harim shalom la'am, the mountains will uphold peace, right, and the gva'ot with tzaka, right, that the mountains, the Dat Mikra understands it in a somewhat concrete sort of way, the mountains will be safe places, right, there are places in Tanakh where mountains are described as places that are unsafe, right? When you were traveling, you always had to be careful, like who's hiding in the mountains? So now the mountains will be safe places, not places where thieves and robbers hide and waiting, because there will be no more thieves, because the just king will eliminate them, right? And so it will be as if the mountains uphold peace and righteousness. Others understand this pasuk, not as part of what of the king's doing, right? Not something the king is in, or a natural outcome of his actions, but rather as a reward. Both the Radak and Mitzvot David, for example, suggest that if a king judges fairly, then posterity will come as a reward. Right? How do we see this in the pasuk? Because the harim and the gevaot, right, places where food would grow, right? It's not the only places where food would grow, but certainly in large parts of this country, you see terraced hills where the fields are, right? So that the fields will give forth prosperity as a result, as a reward for the justice that the king, with which the king rules his people. Since there will be this prosperity, there will be peace, right? And that is why the fields are upholding the peace and the tzedakah, because they, because the peace, the tranquility comes as a result of the prosperity. Why is that? Well, it's very logical, because as these commentaries explain, when everybody has enough to eat, then everybody gets along, right? So Yisu Harim Shalom La'am, the mountains uphold peace, Ugva'ot Bitzdaka, right? And the hills uphold a peace which is based upon tzedakah, upon righteousness. I'd like to suggest perhaps another possibility, that when the land is ruled justly and there is tzedek, right, when there is tzedek, tzedek is a word which implies even-handedness, right, everybody gets what they deserve, then peace will follow because there'll be no reason to fight. Meaning that the mountains upholding peace is a metaphor of the plentifulness which will arise in a just society. Pasuk Dalid returns to the theme of justice. Yishpot aniye am, yoshia livnei avion, v'yidake oshek. Here, what is added is the idea that not only that that the king should judge the poor fairly, but also yidake oshek, right? The king must be the one who will make sure that those who are doing oppression, those who oppress, will be broken. Will be put down. Pasuk Hey, Yira'ucha im Shamesh v'lifnei yareach dor dorim. The king, therefore, right, as a result of this, as a result of being a just judge, he will be recognized forever. Right, as long as there is a sun and a moon, that king will remain. Pasuk Vav. Yered kematar al gez kerevivim zarzif aretz. His words of this king will rain down on the land, right? His words, or perhaps his rain, R-E-I-G-N, right, will rain down on the land, with the implication again that that first of all of that his just reign will bring prosperity, meaning rain is often a symbol for prosperity, of course, in Tanakh, but also that his words and his actions are something which is welcomed by the people, that is wanted by the people, right, like the rain. And in the next pasuk, we see that this metaphorical rain, right, the rule of this just king, will bring a metaphorical flowering. Yifrach biyamav tzadik, v'rov shalom ad bli yareach. Right, in the days of the king, right, this righteous king who promotes righteousness, well, then the righteous will naturally prosper, will flower, right, and peace will endure, right, ad bli yareach, until there is no more moon, meaning forever. That peace will endure, right? And this flowering, this outgrowth of the prosperity of tzaddikim and of peace is a result of this reign, this just rule of the king. Pasuk Chet again returns to the result of the king's actions. Vayerd miyam ad yam uminahal ad Ubinahar ad afsei aretz, that the king will rule miyam liyam, from sea to sea. Right, again, this might be divine reward. Right, this king gets a reward for doing the right thing, or it might simply be the natural outcome of the actions of a righteous king. Right, a king who is good and just, right, who does the right thing, his kingdom will endure. Lefanav yichru tziim v'oivav afar yilachechu. Malchei tarshish v'iim mincha yashivu. Malchei shva usva eskar yakrivu. Eskar yakrivu. V'yishtachavu lo chol melachim kol goyim Ya'avduhu. So here, it goes even another step further, right? In Pasuk Tet, we see that his enemies will surrender before him, right? Will bow before him. And then starting with Pasuk Yud, kings from distant lands will bring tribute to him, right? And why will they do this, right? That will bring all these kings from all sorts of lands will bring, will come to bow before him and to bring him all sorts of gifts. Why? Pasuk Yud Bet, ki yatzil evyon mishaveh, v'ani ve'en ozer lo, yachos al dal ve'evyon, v'nefashot evyonim yoshia. Right, so why is it that these foreign kings, all of these nations of the world, are suddenly recognizing the importance of this king, bowing before him, bringing him tribute? Because he is a kind king, because he is a king who saves the poor people, right? Who helps out those who need. Right, he's the redeemer of all of these downtrodden members of his society. This description of the reaction of the foreign nations, of the foreign kings, to the positive actions of the good king, reminds me a little bit of Zechariah Perek Chet. In Zechariah Perek Chet, there's a beautiful description of the redemption of Yerushalayim after the Galut, and it comes in the context of a question, right? Basically, that the people who are still living in Bavel ask to the people to the leaders in Yerushalayim. Now that Yerushalayim is being rebuilt, are we supposed to continue fasting, right, and all the various fast days associated with the destruction of Yerushalayim? And Zechariah, the prophet, emphasizes over and over and over again, as did many, many prophets before him, that if the people truly want things to be turned around, if they want, essentially, to answer their question, days of mourning to be turned to days of rejoicing, that it's all dependent upon their actions, and particularly the actions that are often emphasized, not exclusively, but often emphasized in Zechariah as well as in other prophets, is that the people have to act justly. So, for example, Zechariah says, we're in Perek Chet of Zechariah, Perek Pasuk Tet Zayin. Eile hadvarim asher ta'asu, dabru amet ish al re'eyo, emet u'mishpat shalom shiptu b'sha'arechem. V'ish et ra'at re'eyo al tachshavu bilvavchem, u'shvuat sheker al te'ehavu, ki et kol eile asher saneti nu'um Hashem. Right, what are the critical things that you must do? Mishpat, justice, or mishpat shalom, right, justice based upon peace, emet, truthfulness, right, ish et ra'at re'eu al tachshavu, don't think about doing bad to other people, right? Don't swear falsely, right? These are the types of things that you have to improve upon, says Zechariah, if you really want your situation to turn around. Right? This goes on for a while, and then, as kind of like a postscript to this to this idea, Zechariah brings this beautiful image. Ko amar Hashem Tzvaot, Pasuk Kaf, od asher yavo amim v'yoshvei arim rabot, right? There will be people who will come from the various nations, from all over the place. V'halchu yoshvei achat el achat le'mor, nelcha haloch l'chalot et pnei Hashem, u'levakesh et Hashem Tzvaot elcha gam ani. They will say to one another, right, these people of these other nations, will say to one another, let's go up to Yerushalayim, right, to seek God. Uvau amim rabim v'goyim atzumim levakesh et Hashem tzvaot b'Yerushalayim u'lechalot et pnei Hashem. And so they will go up to Yerushalayim to seek out the face of God. Ko amar Hashem tzvaot b'yamim hahema asher yachaziku asara anashim mikol leshonot ha'goyim. But in those days, 10 people from all of the different languages, all the different nations will come, v'hecheziku b'chnaf ish Yehudi le'mor, right? They will hold on to the garment of the Yehudi and will say, nelcha imachem ki shamanu Elohim imachem. Right? We want to go with you, right? Because we have heard that God is with you, right? So there's something in this prophecy of Zechariah where when the people finally act with righteousness, with justice, with peace, with truth, right, the other nations will recognize it, right? And they will say, we want to be a part of you. We want to be a part of that, right? Because we see that God is with you, right? It's clear that God is with you when you act in this way, right? And it's very similar, the seeking of peace and justice and all of those other good things is very reminiscent of our Mizmor, where as a result of the actions of the just king who rules his peace people with justice and with peace and with righteousness, right, the other nations will suddenly recognize this and come and recognize the greatness of this king. Pasuk Tetvav, right, expands this one more step. V'chi v'ichtenu mizahav shiva, right? This same king, the one who looks after the welfare of the aniyim, of the downtrodden, right, gives to the downtrodden from the gold of shiva, right? If you look back to Pasuk Yud, right, you will call that the kings of all different nations, including a place called Shiva, come to bring tribute, right? But what does this righteous king do with the tribute? He doesn't squirrel it away somewhere for his own use. He gives it, right, to the people who need it, right? And as a result, what happens? Vayitpalel ba'ado tamid, kol hayom yivarechenu. Right? That the people whom he treats so nicely, who he treats so kindly and so well, right, they will constantly pray for him. And why? Because he's genuinely just and genuinely cares about his subjects, right? And he and therefore they naturally will appreciate and pray for his welfare. Yihi fisat bar ba'aretz b'rosh harim, yir'asht kalvanon piryo, v'yatzitzu me'ir ke'esev ha'aretz. Yihi shmo le'olam lifnei shemesh yinon shemo, v'yitbarchu vo kol goyim yashruhu. Right? So, right, these psukim describe a little bit of the prayers for the welfare of the king. That the poor will pray for the prosperity of the king, right, which of course also brings the prosperity to the people themselves, right? And so what we see here is a mutual helping of one another. When he helps them, then they in return will pray for him and for his prosperity and the prosperity of the entire country. Going back to the title, the heading of our Mizmor, right? The first obvious association of this Mizmor is to King Shlomo HaMelech, who, at least at the beginning of his rule, stood out as the ideal king described in this Mizmor. And these qualities of Shlomo HaMelech can be seen primarily in two sources. The first is in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Kaf Bet, where David HaMelech, right, Shlomo's father, recounts to Shlomo that Hashem would not allow him, right, would not allow David to build the Beit HaMikdash because he had fought too many wars and had spilled too much blood. The implication being, of course, that God's house cannot be built upon blood, can't be established upon blood. Rather, it must be established upon peace. And so Hashem had told David recounts, that he will have a son, right, who will be an Ish Menucha, right, in Perek Kaf Bet, Pasuk Tet, Hine ven nolad lach, hu yihye Ish Menucha, v'hanichoti lo mikol oivav misaviv, ki Shlomo yihye shemo, v'shalom, v'sheket eten al Yisrael b'yamav. Ish Menucha, right, literally means a man of rest, right, one who will not need to fight wars. Right, as the pasuk says, "V'shalom v'sheket eten al Yisrael b'yamav," right. It is Shlomo, the man of peace, right, the one who didn't need to fight wars, who will be able to build the mikdash, and whose kingdom will be ad olam, right. V'achinoti pasuk yud, v'achinoti kisei machuto al Yisrael ad olam. Mitzudat David offers another compelling explanation of why Shlomo was able to build the Mikdash and not his father. He understands Menucha, right, when it calls him an Ish Menucha, not as simply a man who was allowed to be at rest, right, who was given the opportunity not to have to fight wars, but rather that he is a man who pursued Menucha. Right, the Metzudat David says, "Yihyeh heftzo b'menucha." This state of menucha, this lack of war, right, shalom, to give it a word, as it were, is something which must be pursued if it is to be attained, right? And Shlomo, this pasuk implies, according to Metzudat David, was such a person who pursued shalom. So even if the state of lack of war was given to Shlomo as a gift, if it is to be maintained, right, then you need a person who desires Menucha, who desires shalom. And this idea, right, of pursuing peace is found in other sources which talk about peace, right? From Tehillim, for example, Mi ha'isha chafetz chayim, right? Who is the one who desires life? What does he have to do? Sor meira, say tov, bakesh shalom v'radfeu, right? Not only avoid bad, but actively do good. You must desire shalom, right? Bakesh shalom, you have to want it. V'radfeu, right? But you have to actively pursue it as well, right? That is a person who is chafetz chayim. This image of Shlomo is found as well in the famous story in Malachim Aleph, Perek Gimel, where Hashem asks the new young King Shlomo, Ma eten lach, right? What can I give you? And Shlomo Melech answers, right, in Pasuk Tet, V'natata le'avdecha lev shomea lishpot et amcha, lehavin ben tov l'ra, ki mi yuchal lishpot et amcha ha'kaved hazeh. Right, he asks for the ability to judge the people justly. Right, he asks for the wisdom to be able to do so. And Hashem likes this answer, and he says to him that because he asked for the wisdom to be a good judge, and he didn't ask for honor or that his enemies should be vanquished or for wealth or for a long life, that Hashem will give him those things as well. So in this story, we see Shlomo as the one who was not only handed this idyllic kingdom by his father and by God, but as one who actively sought to maintain this ideal. Now, it's true that neither Shalom or Menucha is mentioned in this story, but if we see our Mizmor as a sort of commentary, then certainly it is there, because the way that the king is meant to uphold peace in his kingdom is by pursuing justice, as Shlomo HaMelech desired. And I think it's important to point out here that Shalom, right, is not simply being in a state of no war, right, being in a state of peace in that sense, but it's Shalom in a much broader sense, right? When a king is a good judge to his people, he brings Shalom not only in the sense of not fighting against one's enemies, but that within the people, right, there is shalom. There is a sense of everybody living together, helping each other, right? Shalom in that sense. No conflict within the people. So back to our Mizmor. If the king does this, right, if the king manages to judge the people in a way that brings shalom, right, then everything else comes on its own, right, either as a reward from Hashem or simply as a natural outcome, right? And it has a spiral effect. The king's pursuit of justice creates a situation of peace and prosperity. And in return, the people pray for the well-being of the king, which in return, no doubt, helps them again. And this situation, as we have noted, leads other nations and other kings to recognize the beauty of this society, right? Such a society, the Mizmor says, can endure forever. The sad part of this, of course, when reading this Mizmor, is that how often does this actually happen? Right? Even the wise Shlomo HaMelech failed. And if his failure, right, see the beginning of Sefer Melachim, even if his failure was not specifically in the area of justice, that does seem to be the failing of his son, Rehavam, who chose to rule with an iron fist rather than by wisdom and compassion. So that this ideal situation didn't actually last very long. And this is what led to the falling apart of the kingdom, which was already foretold during the days of Shlomo himself. So it often seems, and we see this far too often, you know, in even in our day, or even more so in our day, that leaders ultimately, and people in general, ultimately prove themselves all too human, right? And it ends up being a disappointment. And even if they didn't, even if there is a great leader who could do all of these things and there's more, then who's to say that the rest of the world will follow? Doesn't it always seem that there would be always somebody who will ruin it, right? To overthrow a great leader out of selfish motives, right? To make a war out of greed, right? The good actions of one person does not necessarily, as we well know, lead to the good actions of others. So this idyllic scenario painted by the Mizmor seems to be somewhat naive. Nevertheless, perhaps that doesn't really matter. Right? Maybe that is the exact point of the Mizmor, that even though there might always be a bad person who will ruin the equation, or if the ideal is still a distant dream, the ideal, the Mizmor is saying, still hold true. Right? That is the responsibility of every leader, or I would say even every person, to strive for justice and righteousness. And that, the pursuit of justice and righteousness, and not constantly pursuing one's own selfish motives, is the way to perfect the world. Right? And so that even that if that seems like a dream, like seems idyllic, right? Then that idyllic scenario is what we should always strive for, even if the journey to that end often seems very, very long. Shabbat shalom u'mevorach.